This TFMR podcast is brought to you by your friends at JM Bullion. Visit jmbullion.com for all your gold and silver bullion needs. Well, hello again out there to everybody at TFMR. Yeah, it's that time. It's Thursday, October the 7th. It's time for your Thursday conversation. Once again, recording instead on Wednesday. But that's just kind of how the calendar works here at TFMR. It has been a very busy month in so many different areas of the markets. And one of the things we've been talking about a lot here at TFMR is Evergrande, where the news just kept getting worse. And so we called it Ever Worse. And as that was playing out over the last couple of weeks, I started to think about Rob Kirby, who many of you know, is the head of Kirby Analytics. Rob's background is in corporate bond trading in the bond markets and was a voice of reason and logic back during the great financial crisis 10, 12 years ago. And so as this stuff was bubbling around, I thought I got to get Rob in for a Thursday conversation. So here he is. Rob, thank you so much for spending some time with me.
My pleasure, Craig. And all right, I'm feeling ever so grand today.
That you are. All right. Well, hold on. Before we do anything, tell everybody about your day job. What is Kirby Analytics?
Kirby Analytics. I'm a madman who does a lot of research and then reports his findings really through people like you and through my website when I feel like writing. And I communicate with my subscribers a whole lot, but I'm basically buried in research every day. That's what I do.
And this can all be found at kirbyanalytics.com, correct?
Correcto.
And one last thing, the type, what do people get? I mean, this research that you're doing, is it kind of macro?
I refer to it as proprietary forensic macroeconomic research.
Okay.
Which is a bit of a mouthful.
It is.
But it kind of means I just try to reverse engineer all of the lies that officialdom puts out and try to put hopefully a thin layer of truth on the misinformation that we are fed with on such a steady dietary regime.
Yeah. And why you and I have been friends for so long, because my tagline has always been the end of the great Keynesian experiment. And that requires a lot of lies and spin. And that's what you try to piece together.
Hear, hear.
All right, my friend. Well, like I said, I thought of you with Evergrande. So we're going to start there today for this call. There was this talk as it was worsening, is this going to be a contagion and a global liquidity crisis and margin call? And the company itself, as I understand, is almost like a Ponzi scheme anyway. But I'm curious to get your thoughts, because again, you do this analysis and you know far better than I what's actually happening here and what, if any, threat it poses. So I'm just going to let it turn over to you. Is it ever worse? Is it ever no big deal? What do you think?
Well, it's a forever misrepresentation of reality. And the thing I find probably the most weird about this whole Evergrande situation, Craig, is that a lot of people who should know better, in my view, are trying to say that this is like the Lehman moment from 2008-09. And to me, that is extremely inappropriate way to characterize what's occurring with Evergrande. And the whole 2008-09 financial crisis, in my view, had little to nothing to do with Lehman. It had everything to do with Bear Stearns. And what it really had to do with was credit. And credit is at the core of what's affecting Evergrande, but to put a different spin on it, or to put hopefully a more realistic spin, the 2008-09 experience all blew up when AAA credit failed. Okay, subprime mortgages in 2008-09 were rated by ratings agencies who should have known better, and who criminally labeled subprime mortgages, which were probably not even investment grade in reality. Mm-hmm. They rated them AAA. Okay, AAA failed in 2008-09. And that was the first time in the history of credit markets that AAA failed. And what that did is it seized up our commercial paper markets, because paper, corporate paper all trades on credit. It's all about credit rating. And when people don't know what AAA means anymore, like AAA used to be, sanctuary in finance.
Right. Yep.
Well, when you take away the sanctity of AAA and you have it fail, suddenly nobody wants to buy any paper of any kind.
And confidence.
It's the paper markets that finance the movement of goods from the field to the plate, from the mine to a widget that you buy at retail. The process of taking, people can relate probably to cars very well, because virtually everybody owns a car or has owned a car. Mm-hmm. And if you've ever bought a car from a dealership, if you do financing through the dealership, if you buy it from Ford, you're going to be dealing with Ford credit. Or if you buy a General Motors product, you're going to be dealing with GMAC, General Motors Acceptance Corporation. These are the paper issuing funding arms that finance the purchase of cars. And so if people don't understand how integral an investment grade credit rating is to the financing of virtually all aspects of what goes on in our lives and in our society. Well, so let's move on to what Evergrande is. Evergrande is an entity in China that builds, ostensibly, I'm going to say it's a house builder or a property developer.
Yeah.
And they issue a whole lot of paper to finance the building of what some people refer to as ghost cities in China. I mean, China's gone through an amazing transformation over the last 20 years. And I suspect they will continue to go through additional transformation. And China's gone from being a hugely agrarian society to a massive, massive transformation in terms of urbanization. I remember back in 2008, Craig, I wrote a paper on China. At the time, there were people saying that China had ghost cities. And China urbanizes a lot differently than the experience in North America. China, their cities tend to be very purpose-built. So, like, China will literally build a new city, and they'll have that'll be the city where hammers are produced. They'll build another city, and that's where mattresses are produced. And this is the way a centralized command economy operates, or it does in the Chinese experience. And I remember back in 2008 when I wrote about the Chinese miracle. They were saying that China was urbanizing at a rate of the equivalent of one Philadelphia every month, and we would need to do so in perpetuity, basically 30, 40 years. So, and understand, like, when North American cities grow, we tend to get what's called urban sprawl, where the boundaries of the city will creep and they'll go get bigger and bigger. In China, they do it a little bit differently. In China, they'll build a city from scratch, and, you know, building codes be damned, and they'll build the city, and then they'll move the people into the city. So, I mean, if China, for instance, were to have five ghost cities, I view that as that's 5 months worth of urbanization. So okay. The way it's presented, you know, in the public about ghost cities may or may not have as much meaning as we might think, because they do things dramatically different in China than we do here. But on top of that, I want to talk about credit quality. Like, Evergrande is not an accident, like I say, the aforementioned Lehman moment, where, you know, anyway, it's a misnomer to me to even call the 2008-09 North American experience the Lehman moment. It was a failure of AAA credit. Evergrande is not a AAA credit. Never has been a AAA credit.
Right.
And let's just say for at least the last year, they haven't even been investment grade. And Evergrande right now is rated as a C credit. So failure is expected when you're rated as a C credit. So Evergrande paper is not exactly what you call liquid, and there's virtually no buyers for it. And lo and behold, who is in the West, who are the biggest holders of Evergrande debt paper? It would be none other than our friends at BlackRock and Vanguard. And in my view, Craig, BlackRock and Vanguard are probably nothing more than manifestations of, or the workings of, the Exchange Stabilization Fund operating in the public space. Because BlackRock, for instance, and not a lot of people would necessarily be aware of this, BlackRock was created in 1988, weeks after the creation of the President's Working Group on Financial Markets. The President's Working Group on Financial Markets was created in the aftermath of the 1987 stock market crash. Mm-hmm. And I was working on a trading desk when that occurred in 1987. And what came in response to that was the President's Working Group on Financial Markets, which is also referred to as the Plunge Protection Team.
Right, right.
And the Plunge Protection Team was created to basically to ensure that another stock market meltdown like the one that occurred in 87 didn't occur again. And wouldn't it make sense that if you were going to create a Plunge Protection Team, you would necessarily want to have a vehicle that can intervene directly in equity markets to help buoy them when the waters got really rough? And lo and behold, I think we're looking at BlackRock, which is the extension, the equity market extension of the Exchange Stabilization Fund. I mean, that's what it is to me.
So, Rob, that if they are the two biggest holders in the West of Evergrande debt, they can probably absorb it because of their size, the loss, and it's not an interconnected thing. Like, you know, we always worry about the EU banks or that loss of confidence in 2008, and the commercial paper market and everything else that seized up.
So my belief, Craig, the investment would have been made on behalf of BlackRock / Vanguard, because they're joined at the hip, those two organizations. The investment in Evergrande would be taken because, you see, Evergrande makes up a huge, huge portion of the Chinese economy. Like, yeah. There's the talk is like 25%. Well, in my view, the way I view the world, I think that it would be of strategic value to the controllers of the dollar fiat empire to have some leverage or mustard over the Chinese by taking a strategic stake in something so central in the Chinese economy. It's sort of like. I know business people in the world, over the years, and like I know some business guys who are very, very wealthy, and they hold the mortgages on their accountant's house, on their lawyer's house, and you know, and things generally work very well for them in business. Right.
Well,
and so, anyway, it's so the mustard.
Does if it's more of a internal Chinese thing then? And if it does eventually collapse, does that create kind of a liquidity deflationary hole for them that they got to fill in by devaluing the yuan or you know their credit?
I mean, I look at it. Could it be simply the Chinese actually coming to the realization, Craig, that elements of the dollar fiat regime have taken an interest in this because they felt that they could use it as leverage to bully us to do certain things. And why don't we turn the tables on them and say, screw you, we're not gonna pay that debt off because we feel it's illegitimate. You see, the Chinese are extremely ruthless, but they're not stupid. Like, I look at it this way. If I can figure out what the controllers of the dollar fiat levers are doing, the Chinese have probably figured it out before me. And they're probably very aware of the snare that the West has set for them. And I don't want anyone for a minute to start thinking that I'm an admirer of the Communist Chinese Party, because I don't think there's any such thing as a good communist.
Right.
The only good communist, in my view, is a dead one. So that's just the way I was brought up and the way I think.
But, so, Rob, where do you think it all heads eventually? And does it have an impact?
Well, Craig, in my view, we're headed to war. The posturing that's going on right now, geopolitically, we've got a dying money regime in the West, the fiat money regime. It's dying. China is on a fiat money regime themselves currently. But, you know, there's a lot of talk that they may be contemplating introducing a gold-backed currency, which I can't speak to as to whether they will or they won't. I mean, the West certainly isn't going to a gold-back anything. Because in my view, America doesn't own any gold. And you know, they claim they have 8,000 tons, but I don't believe they have any. Not that they own themselves. And we're at a quandary. And I mean, it seems that the Chinese Communist Party has their hooks well into American leadership, well into American legislators.
Yep.
At state and local levels as well.
Yep.
And I mean, I look at the directives that are coming out of Washington, coming out of state governments in America, and my country as well. We have a sitting prime minister in Canada who has stated on record that the country in the world that he admires the most is China, because of their totalitarian ways and their ability to do things from a command perspective.
Given his track record, that's not surprising. So Rob, to that end, I want to just skip forward to the other thing I wanted to ask you about, is this current, some people call it kabuki theater, I call it theater of the absurd, all this debt financing in the U.S., the Fed's got their hands full. But I want to ask you about this trick that so many people are coming back to, especially the modern monetary theorists. And it's this idea of the trillion-dollar coin. You mentioned confidence, right? That's what the AAA rating is all about. You have confidence, and that the interaction between the bank, nothing takes place without confidence. The dollar doesn't have any value without confidence, right? Everything's about confidence. You got to, and when confidence fails, the whole thing begins to unravel rather quickly. Well, if these modern monetary guys are like, oh no, this is a great idea, you can do this, it's not even inflationary, I see it as a shot across the bow of confidence. Oh no, we can pay off $1 trillion of debt just by bidding a baseball card and saying it's worth $1 trillion and giving it to the Fed. I would imagine you have some thoughts on this, and that's the other thing, well, I wanted to ask you about, what are your thoughts on this?
What I would say is if they really do print $1 trillion or mint $1 trillion platinum coin, which is the talk, if they do it, then I do believe that we will learn that Chicken Little was really right and the sky is falling. Because that would, in my view, that could be the straw that breaks the proverbial camel's back with right. fiat money. And the repercussions of such an undertaking, in my view, could literally pull the plug on the dollar, on all things fiat, Craig.
Mm-hmm.
We're in for a financial rude awakening.
Isn't it, Robin, isn't it kind of like, I mean, it's confidence that you know is going to fail at some point. That's, you know, when Weimar went Weimar. But I mean, and it's confident. And this just, I mean, it's going to fail eventually. But doesn't something like this just start the minute and hour hands just spinning on the clock in terms of failing in confidence?
You know what, Craig? I do love the reaction from some of the mainstream commentators who say, well, Mr. Kirby, if you were correct, wouldn't we see a reaction in the precious metals market? And, you know, and my answer is just flatly no, of course. The precious metals, in my view, Craig, will have their day in the sun, but it won't be so long as the LBMA and COMEX are functional.
Yeah. Right.
The premiums being paid, you know, it was very interesting. I had a discussion with somebody last night about this. We had I was just using last night's pricing. The spot price on silver in the futures market was $22.50, but the cheapest I could find an American Silver Eagle or a Canadian Silver Maple was $28.50 American. So that's a $6 premium, yeah,
which is
over the paper price. Mm-hmm. And like you're up around 30%. Okay. Like when you have to pay a 30% premium to buy the underlying, it's highly indicative that there's something amiss. Okay. And it makes a mockery of the paper price because the paper price is not reflective of what people are willing to pay for the real underlying. And I can't think of another market that has such a mismatch between the futures price and the actual price being paid on the street to acquire an ounce. Like, it's just ridiculous. And that does not bode well for the metals in the near term, but it indicates to me that there's still huge underlying nascent demand for physical metal, and it indicates to me that they're having trouble keeping, and it's a very expensive undertaking to keep the paper price $6 lower than what people are actually paying for a physical ounce. And that tells me that it's not sustainable in the long term. And the day will come when it will just be deemed too expensive to fritter away resources on artificially suppressing the price of metal.
Yeah.
And that's what's been going on for a lot of years, Craig, without a doubt.
Sure. Yeah.
And you see, the reason why this can be undertaken, mentioned briefly the Exchange Stabilization Fund, and we also talked about BlackRock being a manager of funds under the Social Security Trust Administration umbrella. BlackRock manages the lion's share of that money. And that money is being turned over, which is roughly $400 billion in investable assets. That money, according to Dr. Mark Skidmore's work, who's an expert in public finance, and he's a PhD economist who occupies a very prestigious chair at Michigan State University, and he's endowed with a research staff of PhD students, and they do brilliant work. And his work shows that in 2019, in 1 year, under BlackRock's management, $400 billion in assets was turned over to the tune of over $44 trillion in 1 year. Well, Craig, that is, to me, these are not Dr. Skidmore's words, but in my view, when you have $400 billion in retirement assets being turned over to the tune of $44 plus trillion in a year, that is a massive neon sign that says fraud is occurring here.
Yeah.
And my view is that that is going on every year. And I reckon there are tens of trillions of dollars being created illicitly, which are lining the coffers of the Exchange Stabilization Fund. And the Exchange Stabilization Fund is a secretive adjunct of the U.S. Treasury that does not publish any financials, and nobody has oversight over the ESF. They do not report to Congress, and they're engaged in whatever it is that they choose to be engaged in, with a mission statement that says we are here to perpetuate the U.S. dollar as the world's reserve currency. That's their right. mission. And if that requires them to be engaged in surreptitious trading in the precious metal space to keep the paper price of precious metal, giving the appearance that all is well in the mm-hmm. fiat system, then so be it. And if they have to waste a trillion here or a trillion there, so be it. Because the perpetuation of the dollar and supporting the narrative that the dollar is fit and proper to be the world's reserve currency, there's no cost that's too big.
Right. That's the linchpin of everything.
To perpetuate that narrative.
Yeah. I'm sitting there doing that math, Robert. $400 billion into a trading volume of $44 trillion. That's 100 yeah. times. That's like having a $10,000 account.
Okay. But Craig,
over $1 million in trading volume.
Yeah. Craig, look at this too. Because this plays into the whole notion. What kind of a narrative comes out of officialdom regarding cryptocurrency?
Yeah.
I mean, they're not necessarily against crypto or digital currency, but what they're trying to do is say, the narrative I hear is that Bitcoin is too volatile to be taken seriously as a reserve asset.
Yeah, that's right.
That's the narrative I hear. Okay, but if you look at the crypto space, Craig, like Coinbase.com, and if you go to that page, you'll see what the daily volume is in crypto trade in dollar terms. So, I mean, I looked at it this morning. It was $110 billion in the latest 24 hours. Annualize that. If you annualize it, you're up over $40 trillion in turnover in
yep.
a year. Okay, $40 trillion in turnover. Do you think that's Michael Saylor trading with Paul Tudor Jones?
Right, that's true.
Craig, when you have volume of $40 trillion in an asset turning over in a year, there's trade settlement occurring there.
Yeah.
Substantially.
Yeah, it has to be.
Okay. And what that tells me is that there's already substantial trade settlement occurring in cryptocurrencies, except no one dares say it.
Interesting. Rob, you're always so fascinating to talk to. And again, as a guy that does what you do, of course you're fascinating to talk to. You've got this is what you do all day is connect all these dots.
Anyway, I'm just a madman.
Well, and just one last thing on that coin. Do you think
I want one?
I mean, does your gut tell you? I mean, it's got to just be theoretical, physics. I mean, it can't possibly, even like just a normal person on the street, if you walked up to them and said, hey, they're going to print a coin made of platinum and say it's worth $1 trillion and pay off the debt that way, people go, what the fuck are you? That's what? Exactly. They can't possibly try it, would they?
So how many of them are they going to make, Craig? That's the other
thing. Well, that's just it. Why not make 30 of them or 100 of them? Anyway, you don't think they'd actually do that unless it was really, really – we can't have a default on the debt. You know, the political gridlock is so bad. We've got to do this as a last resort so that we don't – I mean
– Well, Craig, to be honest with you, in my mind, if they mint a $1 trillion coin, the results will be disastrous. Which actually basically makes me think that absolutely they're going to do it.
Maybe they will. You're right.
Yeah.
Oh, shit, Rob. I tell you what, it sure is always fun to talk to you, my friend. We have to do this more often. Again, Rob Kirby at KirbyAnalytics.com, a link on this page. So you can go from here directly there and check out Rob's services and see if it's something that would benefit you. It certainly benefited us these last 30 minutes. That's for sure. Rob, thanks, man. It's just always great fun.
My pleasure.
Hopefully we'll do it again soon. And from all of us here at TFMR, thanks for listening. We'll see where this all goes from here, and we'll have another Thursday conversation for you next week.